Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You're looking at me. This I was on CNN at the time. I'm thinking.
I'm trying to remember.
I'm thinking this guy. He's got to know who I am. I know who he is. And you were shaking hands, and you're looking right over my left shoulder the entire time. And
really?
Like, okay, thanks, dude. And then you walk off, and Whoopi
Big
Goldberg.
Time.
Whoopi Goldberg comes over and goes, Leon. I'm like, okay, so she knows me, and he doesn't. Okay, thanks a lot, pal.
Well, we've mended that fence, haven't we?
Over the years. The good thing is Leon doesn't really remember it with bitterness.
No, I'm not bitter at all.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
We're live at Chatter, where we serve breakfast when I do this show from 7 o'clock in the morning on. Thank you to everybody for showing up. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue and Jennifer Street, Northwest in Friendship Heights. Tori Clark is here. Luke Russert is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is here to run the board and do the news. And this is why you send your children to good schools. Because at the stroke of 8 this morning...
It's a stressful morning for me.
The stroke of 8 this morning, the registration for the Rehoboth Beach Country Club member guest opened. And you have to do it on a computer. I am incapable of doing it.
Yes,
I got instructions from
you're
Pat
capable,
Mastrian.
You're unwilling to do it. There's a difference.
I'm on something.
Sounds accurate.
I'm incapable or uncapable or unwilling or whatever. And Michael came through at the stroke of 8, and we're good, right?
You forwarded me an email with a 15-step login process.
From Pat, yes.
There's three different, like, safe walls to get through.
Yes.
And I have to add your guest's name,
yes,
home
Eddie.
Club, which is more complicated because he's unaffiliated.
Unaffiliated.
Handicap,
he plays public courses.
Preference
can't help
for
me
transportation.
Yes. I prefer good transportation.
Meal
high
choice?
Class.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's why we sent you to a good school.
And why do they have to have this at 8 a.m.? Why can't they, I don't know, maybe let you do this the night before?
No, 8 a.m. is when it starts, and it'll fill up by noon today. It will fill up by noon, so I'm very happy with that.
But nice job, Michael.
I had 4 hours to take care of this, and you made me wait online for 15 minutes?
I thought you did a great job. I mean, what is this scorn? come on. You did a great job. I could have asked Luke to do it, but no, I asked you to do it.
Well, I registered for the Dewey Beach Open. Starboard to Mile
Yeah,
court.
There you go.
That's very
that's
good.
Great.
It's
yeah.
a different tournament.
A variety of people have enclosed cards for us to sign, which we do. Claire Seeger is one of those people getting a card.
Is she related to Corey Seeger?
I don't think she's related to Corey Seeger. Let's see. Alan is getting a card. He earned tenure at Pierce College in Pool Up, Washington. That's very, very good. Husband Dave Seeger wanted this for Claire Seeger. We sign these things.
Yes.
It's getting to be a burden, but we do it. Chris Hennessy for his graduation at Sody, S-O-D-D-Y, Daisy High School in Sody, Daisy, Tennessee. It took place in May of 1997, but don't let that deter you.
Not at all.
And we have one.
Very timely.
Gretchen Benz. This is for her husband, Greg Calhoun. Oh, no. A man to whom I'm related by employment and a member of the official sports medicine staff of the Tony Kornheiser Show. He'll be competing in the Massanutten Mountain Trials 100-mile run.
Yow.
100-mile run in Fort Valley, Virginia. He estimates the run will take between 27 and 30 hours.
Is that 100 miles
in a row?
And
Gretchen says, tell Michael it'll be 75 and sunny for the entirety of the race. We do all these things. Can you imagine a 100? I can't even drive 100 miles.
I'm surprised you don't like signing things. Because as an only,
I'm happy to sign.
But you're a fellow only child. Did you not spend time like daydreaming in class just practicing your signature?
Yes, I have a beautiful penmanship.
Me too. I probably spent like half a class in middle school just, well, how I never, can I look, my signature look like Cal Ripken? How can I make it look like the president?
I never had brothers or sisters to worry about.
Me neither.
So it was just me.
Right. Luke's signature looks like a ball player.
Really?
Yeah.
And only children share, all only children share this one thing. If I want it, I want it now.
Yes.
Correct.
So I go get it.
Yes.
But
correct.
I want it now.
Yes, you want it.
I don't know.
I
don't want to. No, we don't wait.
No.
It is time to get a washing machine.
Friends and family all say, we hate you because we can't shop for you because everything you want, you already get it yourself.
That's exactly how correct. It works. From Lewis Hicks in Ithaca, New York, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and the woman to whom I'm related by bridge, an old people game played by residents of Ingleside, collaborated to produce the enclosed copies of Traveling Through Glass. The first section includes poems for the numbers 0 through 12, written by Lisa Harris and illustrative drawings by Patricia Brown. When I explained to the artist your obsession with numbers and Jeannie's art practice, they agreed to send you a book of that. When I suggested a promotional pitch of 13 poems, two artists, one collaboration, hot book, they looked at me askance because they don't watch Hot Bench. This is the shameless self-promotion read. Patty's paintings are on exhibit at the Cap Art Space in Center Ithaca for the month of May. Additional images can be found at SOAG.org. Lisa will read selected poems in the same Cap location as part of the annual Spring Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S, on May 5th at 1 p.m. Copies of Traveling Through Glass are available through Amazon.com. So that's good. So we have those. We got a whole bunch of other things. We got stuff from the Masters. We got, what do we have here?
We're going to have to come in earlier for the signing.
It's just,
we're running out of time.
It takes about 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, Loyola University, enclosed in this box of that are some Loyola University Chicago fan scarves for the crew. Unfortunately, they don't come in silk or lace, so Liza will just have to tough it out. Also, bobbleheads of team captain and the men's basketball champion Jerry Harkness in 1963 and his sister Jean bobblehead. Nigel, perhaps we could work together on a Salty the Sea Cat bobblehead. Could be as profitable as Chatter. Finally, a shout-out to Officer Newman with the Loyola Campus Police, whose idea it was to send this tribute in junk for the prize closet. This is from Tim Saboro, the senior associate athletic director for external operations. This is very, very nice. This is all
nice.
We have those. And we gave some of those out. Luke, you could have one of them. Those same colors as Boston College, you know.
Yeah, same colors as BC. And Sister Jean, we could use her grace in our basketball program.
Sure. From Peter Lammas in Dunwoody, Georgia. I'm a long time little, going back over 20 years to the original ESPN show. Would like you to know the happiness and joy you've brought me over the years. I've listened to your podcast while driving the family in the minivan to far off places like Disney World, the beach, and the in-laws' house. My 4-year-old masculine child Arthur loves watching you on PTI and shouting, "There's Wilbon and there's Mr. Tony," when you come on the screen. Now, they gave us a bunch of stuff from the Masters, which I didn't read the note first. I didn't read the note, and I gave a lot of the stuff out, and maybe I should have read the note because
it's
no, 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 for Tori, a Masters Tervis tumbler since Brian wouldn't take her last year, but Tori wanted the regular thing.
I like these. These are more
for fake newsboy Saliza. A sleeve of personalized fake Masters golf balls for me. A sleeve of Masters golf balls, and tell Michael they're not for him. For Luke, some 2018 Masters plastic cups. Considering the guy won this year, I've gotten rid of anything stating 2018 Masters, and figured since Luke is basically the podcast version of the hated Patrick Reed, he deserved them more than just throwing them away.
Straight fire.
And for the socialite, a Georgia Tech hat, since we're both alums. So, but I gave all that stuff out. I gave it out. I'll get to all these
other things later.
But the gifts are very nice. So when Jeannie gets here, that's out. Let's start.
I got to get an Augusta State. Or where did Patrick Reed go?
Augusta State.
Yeah, I got
to a short while, yes.
So he was thrown out.
Send me an Augusta State hat.
He won two national championships and they tossed him, right?
No, he was suspended from that team. He was tossed.
From Georgia.
From Georgia.
So let me get to the actual beginning of the show, which is the Boston Celtics winning last night. The Boston Celtics playing without Kyrie Irving and playing without Jaylen Brown. And forget Gordon Hayward, who hasn't played all year.
They're playing
without two of their best player and maybe their second or third best player. They get 29 points from Terry Rozier on 7 threes. They get 10 of 12 shooting from Al Horford and 26 points. They get 28 points from Jason Tatum. Okay, they shot 17 of 36 from three, which is great. And the other team, Philadelphia, shot 5 of 26. So this is why Boston won the game. I think, and I could be wrong, I think this is the best Boston is going to play. I mean, I think they played way over their heads. Jaylen Brown coming back will help. Marcus Smart appeared to be hurt last night. He's got a bad thumb. I think that Philadelphia should be favored. I would love to see Boston win. This is being touted as another 76ers Celtics rivalry. It is not. They don't have that star power. You can say all you want that the night they had is comparable to the nights of McHale and Bird and Parrish. You can say that, and it is one night, but these are not the same players. This is a well coached team, a team that accepts coaching, which a lot of teams don't. Players think they're too good to be coached. You got that right here in Washington, D.C. Too good to be coached. But and their coach is completely ineffective. But Boston accepts coaching, and Boston played great. And because Luke is here, like I go, I'm really old. I go back to Russell Chamberlain.
Sure.
I go back to, you know, Irving against Bird and McHale, and Irving and Moses. I go back to Barkley, and you know, and just great Iverson. The players are not that great yet. They're not that great yet. It doesn't have that feel. But I take advantage of Luke going to school at BC. Well, you must have gone to that gym. What was it like?
I went a lot of times, and I think it's a smart comment from you that you call it a gym because it does have a collegiate atmosphere. And I was talking with noted Celtics fan Nigel here prior to the show. One of the things about playing in the Garden is that if you're a NBA team, especially a young NBA team or one that is not necessarily a well-tuned, cohesive unit, and I went to Game 5 that the Wizards had against the Celtics last year, the fans in that arena pay attention to every single facet of the game. So if you're the point guard and you bobble the basketball coming up the floor and you perhaps don't necessarily commit a turnover, but you almost do, they go crazy, like rabid hyenas, and they start screaming at you. So that unless you are a veteran who's been there many, many times before in the playoffs, you start to develop a sort of sense of apprehension that, oh my gosh, one of the things that I'm going to do is going to elicit this to scream at me. The other thing, though, is I think it's safe to say that Stevens is the best coach in the NBA outside of Popovich.
He's good.
Belichickian. And the way he game plans and the way that he finds players that fit his system.
He's unafraid to put other players in for very specific reasons.
Correct. And he gets everything out of his guys. And I wonder if this is now a change in the NBA because maybe this is a sort of money ball for the NBA to some degree, or at least in the sense of I'm going to get guys that fit my system and I'm not going to worry about potential. The NBA has been obsessed with potential going back, you know, Kwame Brown, you know, the first pick ahead of Shane Battier. Maybe we have now the system that, hey, fit your coach's strengths, get guys who want to play defense, who can come and rebound, and then, you know, Rozier this year, Kelly Olynyk last year. I mean, he finds the stars.
To your point about how difficult it is to play there, they had a great cheer with Ben Simmons. He's not a rookie. He's not a rookie, which you have to believe got in Ben Simmons' head just a little bit.
He claimed it didn't.
I believe it did.
And Donovan tweeted his approval of that.
In the old days, this is the new Boston Garden. In the old Boston Garden, with which I am very familiar, having covered a million games in there, one of the things that the great and sainted late Red Auerbach used to do is he would turn the heat up. There's no air conditioning. There was no air conditioning. So when you're in the playoffs in May and June and it's really hot,
sweltering,
he would turn the heat up in your locker room. Your locker room was over 100 degrees. He did this all the time. There were great advantages to the building itself. And I'm glad that you went. When you went to school in Philadelphia, Michael, you didn't go watch, because the Palestra is the Palestra and is so meaningful in the city. You didn't watch a lot of pro ball, did you? You didn't go to
No, and I was also there when you had a turning point with the professional arenas, so you didn't have a lot of those old spaces that you would have covered back in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, with the Spectrum. The Spectrum was a barn. And I liked it a lot. I like covering it. And the new, what is the new one called?
Comcast,
yeah.
Is that what it is? So, but you went. You went
well,
to the Boston.
Well, on Red Auerbach's point, did you know his first coaching job ever was at St. Albans High School?
Oh, I thought it was at GW.
No, that was his first time as a head coach. And he came and gave an assembly, and he had to have been in his early 90s. And he said that one of the things you have to do as a coach is exploit your team, your opponent's weaknesses by encouraging environmental factors that could hurt those weaknesses. So he mentioned the heat. He said if he ever played a fast team, that he would tell the equipment guy to go get nets where the ball fell through slower. So that if someone
couldn't grab it
and run it up the floor, the ball would take a few seconds to get through the net. And I said, that's just genius.
It's genius.
Original Belichick.
Yeah, Red Auerbach was a genius. I look at that game. I don't think Boston can play that well again. I just don't.
Feels
if
like
they
a
can,
watermark
God bless them. What did you think?
I don't want to bet against them. I just think that
they're 4-0 at home.
It's a very tough out at that building, and I purposely think that the Wizards actually did try and tank towards the end of the year because they didn't want to face them. They didn't want to face Cleveland. So I will ride with Brad Stevens as far as the ship can go of anybody in these playoffs.
Tori?
I watched. you know, show prep. Rogier did a really adorable interview after the game.
He's a good talker. He's a good talker.
Looks right into the camera. Yeah.
He was wearing a Drew Bledsoe jersey.
Did you like that?
I did. A Drew Bledsoe jersey. I did like that.
He was adorable. But I do. You know, we talked about this a little bit last week. You've got your aging Lions, and then you've got, it seems like there are a lot of teams with a lot of injured players. So my question to you is, if they get their injured players back, does that change your opinion about the Celtics?
Well, no, because they can't get Kyrie Irving back. They will get Jaylen Brown back, mm-hmm. and that's the team you've seen for 2 months.
Right.
It's a very good team because they have. It's not just having a very good coach. I can't stress this enough. It's being willing to be coached. You look around the NBA, these AAU kids, they are not willing to be coached by anyone because they say, I know my game. Yeah, my game's good. I don't have to be coached. You shut up and just give me the ball. And that's...
Indiana played this type of basketball against Cleveland. And
Indiana's good.
It might show... I go back to this. Maybe this is a new NBA era where you find one talented player and then you build the role guys that actually do their jobs.
The most coachable team in the NBA, oddly enough, is the best team. Because they have assembled... Golden State has assembled a group of people who are... This is amazing. They're rather selfless. Yeah. They are. They're rather selfless, and that's why they are so great.
But does the coaching only matter in the playoffs? Or does it matter most? Right? Does the coaching
matters
take a
most
more prominent
in
role in the playoffs?
You have to train your team all year to accept being coached. The Wizards do not accept coaching. Am I wrong on this, Luke?
No, you're completely right. And
they don't want to be coached by Scott Brooks or anybody.
Or anybody, yeah.
Or anybody.
Not Randy Whitman.
They don't. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Bill Livingston about the Cleveland Browns and the Cleveland Cavaliers, and specifically LeBron James, who was phenomenal in the last series and got no help whatsoever. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the SeatGeek ad, and we do this after sport opens. You know, I didn't get to all the letters today. I'll get to some of the letters tomorrow.
Yeah.
Letters are nice. I think there's an expectation that people want their letters read.
Well, including one that calls you one of the world's great thinkers. We've got to get to that.
I may get to that later today from Purdue University. But this is the SeatGeek ad. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing. There's a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. If you want to sit near Luke Rustard at a Nats game, you can go to SeatGeek. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you identify immediately the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Consequently, make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And no, the copy does not include the word consequently. Best of all, my listeners to the Tony Kornheiser podcast, get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek. Enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
The non-personalized email reads, "We are Civic Duty. We're a young DC-based alternative rock band just starting out searching for gigs. We're inspired by 60s, 70s, and 90s era rock and roll." What happened to the 80s? They passed completely on the 80s.
It seems to have.
"Main influences are the Beatles, Mac DeMarco, of whom I've never heard, and Nirvana. We were wondering if perhaps one of the songs below could be played on the show. We're building the fan base. Any help would be appreciated. If there's a spot anytime, or if you have any questions, just mail us back here at civicdutyband@gmail.com. This is called Jitters. And I do have a question. I asked Alexa to play the Beach Boys last night, and she said that...
She said not tonight?
No, she said the streaming wouldn't work at the moment, but I could get more information from Amazon. And I thought they were looking for me to give more money. And so if the people at Civic Duty can help me with that, that's my question I have. It's right. Like when you call Kevin Sheehan, and he says, "Leave a name and number," and I do this, "Rutherford B. Hayes, 14. And that's it, and I get out. Bill Livingston, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, a longtime friend, gets on with us now. We always have Bill on for Cleveland things, although God knows we could do Boston and Philadelphia with Livy as well. There's two big things. There's the Browns and there's LeBron and the Cavs. And I guess we'll start, Bill, with the notion that there's just not that much around LeBron. You've watched all of the teams that he's played for in Cleveland and obviously in Miami when he left. Is this the worst? Worst is the wrong word. Is this sort of the least high-powered supporting cast he's had?
Easily. Not ever, because the 2017 that made the finals is generally considered the weakest, if not, well, probably the second weakest next to the Knicks, the year of the labor troubles, and Latrell Sprewell was the star, and they came out of the eighth spot. They were terrible. I mean, they were swept by San Antonio, as were the 2007 Cavs. The difference being this year, the second best player is Kevin Love, who was still better than anybody else on the 2007 Cavs. Probably the second best player then was Ilgauskas. But yeah, it's it's not pretty basketball. They won a championship with isolation basketball, but they had Irving too then. They had Kyrie, so they had two closers.
Right.
Now it's just on, the ball just stops in the clutch of close games. It stops a lot of time in regular play. And I call the play 23 for 24. 23 is his number, and how long is the shot clock? And he usually ends with a step back three that he makes or misses, or a pass to a teammate who takes a panicky wild miss. It's predictable. It's sluggish. Barkley ripped it on TNT in a very funny way last night. He said, Golden State and Boston pass more than any of the other teams. And he named the Wizards, Oklahoma City, the Bucks, as teams that want to get it to one guy. And he said, the Cavs are the worst in the world. It's worst in the league. Everybody, those other guys just stand around waiting for LeBron to bail them out with their thumbs. And he paused and he said, twiddling.
Yeah.
And Kenny Smith said, that's not what you meant to say. And Barkley said, well, I caught myself. But he's entirely right. I mean, the criticism is just.
There is a remarkable statistic. I'm not a stat guy. I'm really not. But we used this yesterday on PTI. In the seven games against Indiana, LeBron had 241 points. The next highest point total on the entire team was Kevin Love with 80. It's unbelievable. That means LeBron scored three times more than the next best guy, and not a single person on Cleveland got as many as 20. Look, Livy, I think Kevin Love's a really good player. He's an all-star. He hasn't played like it lately.
He's hurt. He's got a bad thumb, but, he did step up and make some big shots at the end of that game. But, he took a lot. He's always the guy that everybody jumps on here. And, he's playing a sport at the NBA level. It depends on hand-eye coordination and catching the ball and touch. It's not on his shooting hand, but he had 15 turnovers in the championship year in seven games. In the championship year, he had 27 in 20 games. He's obviously not the same. But the early boost that everyone expected from the young, energized guys, Larry Nance Jr. is the only one you can count on, and he's an energy guy, a bit of a rim protector, actually, an explosive dunker. Gets a lot of extra possessions for them, and will score, in the high single digits or low double digits. He's not the sidekick. He's not anything like that. Clarkson fell off the side of the world.
Yes.
The second scorer in the league off the bench. I did a piece mentioning him and put I'm sure he appreciated it, put a YouTube cartoon of Wile E. Coyote with his touching faith in the disastrous products of the Acme Corporation and his rocket skates flying off a cliff. I couldn't think of any better way to say what's happened to Jordan Clarkson. And Rodney Hood sometimes is a decent, and sometimes is just kind of there.
Is this a failure of the general manager, Livy? Is this a failure of the coach that we end up in a circumstance where LeBron has to, and LeBron's capable of it every single night, but has to play superhuman basketball for them to win?
It's a combination of everything. They had so many injuries. Lou, I don't think Lou has been, he's had health issues all year too. I don't think Teron has had a real good year, but they had so many guys coming in, coming going, and they remade the roster. And a very funny tweet I saw by Conan O'Brien when they traded half the team. He said, I don't know how this happened, but apparently I've been traded to the Cavaliers. just about everybody was traded. It's been tough for him to find put the rotations together because he wasn't around for 3 weeks, and then the team was constantly in flux. And it's all done under this excruciating pressure of trying to win big to convince LeBron to stay here. That said, and I used some of those stats. He had one of the incredible stats was he had 62 assists in the series, and the rest of the team had 66. He shot 55%, and the rest of the team playing with the best player in the world, on whom, you know, the Indiana Pacers were fixated, shot 38.8%. You can't win that way. You can't beat really good teams that way. You've got to have those guys step up a little more, and Love's not sound. George Hill played great in the fourth quarter. Lou knew his back would not hold up for a game. He put him in when he finally pulled LeBron in the last minute of the third quarter. They went 4.5 minutes without LeBron and actually expanded the lead. Well, everybody was sharing the ball and all, but that's nice for 4.5 minutes. Let's see that be sustained for 48. It wouldn't have been.
Do you think, Bill, that LeBron leaves no matter what? After this year, no matter what?
You know what? I keep going back and forth. It makes sense for him to leave. There's no question. As this team is constituted, he's not going to win a championship. And part of that's his fault for not ever making a long-term commitment and, you know, where they knew what they were going to have and they could build a little more and bring some young players in and develop them. But he had a statement the other night after the seven-game series about his family, and that's the thing that's most important to him, and how much, you know, he moved back here because he felt he kind of grew up here and he owed some things to the people of Cleveland and wanted to do things for the people of the area of Northern Ohio. So I don't know. I think he's pulled two ways. I would think he's going to leave, but if he doesn't, it'll be because of that hometown attachment and that loyalty to not wanting to uproot his family.
All right, let me switch gears to the Browns, who are fascinatingly terrible. I mean, they really stink. They could have had, it seems to me, and maybe you will disagree, I think they could have had Saquon Barkley and Baker Mayfield just by drafting the running back one and seeing what happens at four. Why did they take Mayfield with one?
Because as my lead, I had driven 300 miles to Indianapolis for the disastrous Game 6 the next night. And was tired as hell, and I'm watching the Bucks and the Celtics on TV, and the crawler comes across that the Browns took Baker Mayfield, and I called the desk and said, I got to write on this. Got to write on this. Because my lead was people who don't learn from their mistakes are doomed to become Cleveland Browns. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
I also said that he reminds me of Manziel, which is an unfair comparison, but, you know, and Manziel, you know, had the study habits of Bluto in Animal House, so we'll see how it goes. No, they could have had Barkley. They could have taken a quarterback without character issues. They could have taken a pass rusher at four also instead of Denzel Ward, although I almost swooned because since they came back in 1999, now, I'm not talking about guys who were over the hill, like, you know, like guys like Charles Bentley, who came back and immediately blew out his knee, or Dante Whitner. Since they came back in the NFL draft, in all those years, Denzel Ward was the third Ohio State player they drafted. Ohio State's been pretty good in this century.
Yes.
2 hours down the road. You know, that's disgraceful, too. But, you know, I was happy to see them take a Buckeye. I think he's a good player. I think they could have done better at that spot. And Mayfield, you know, he's 6 feet tall. Is he going to be Russell Wilson or Drew Brees? Well, that's about the list of 6 feet tall quarterbacks who are really good.
Right now, that's the list. I mean, you can go back in history, but yes, right now,
this. The game's changed, though. Eddie LeBaron, whom I saw as an expansion Cowboys team, he's not going to play anymore. You know, at 5'10".
How many games until he starts?
No, there's no reason for me to want him to fail. I just thought it was a bad pick.
Well, I'm just wondering.
I was as a quarterback better than Darnold because I saw Darnold against the Buckeyes. He had enough penchant for the disastrous red zone mistake to be clearly a Brown quarterback in the making.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Browns last year, DeShone Kizer's the worst starting quarterback I've ever seen in my life. How many games until you think that Baker Mayfield actually starts? You don't really believe that he's not going to play this year, do you?
No, I don't. I think, you know, maybe mid-season or whenever the bye week falls, that's usually the time they do, you know, it's time to give them backup intensive preparation that week. It's hard to be this bad for this long. I mean, you have to have a front office that continues to do stupid stuff. And many times I've wondered in print why Hugh Jackson still has a job.
It's 1-31. It's terrible.
Well, you know, there were great on January 31. There were part that people were putting on Facebook, you know, Happy Hugh Jackson Day.
Right. 1-31. Right.
Yeah. I call him the only thing I have in common, I hope, with the President of the United States is a fondness for belittling nicknames. And I have called him not a clue, Hugh, one will do, Hugh, and should be through. I thought he ruined I don't know how much Kaiser had, but he was inaccurate with a strong arm. He put him in a deep drop, bombs away, long passing offense. And, you know, the line didn't protect him. And he benched him and then brought him back. And, you know, trust me on this. And he said he was going to go jump in the lake if they didn't win a game. I don't think he jumped in the lake. And I don't think they won a game.
They did. They didn't either. Thank you, Livy.
All right.
Bill Livingston, who has phone issues. Do you think that phone is okay? Do you think people will be able to hear that? That was a phone issue. That was a Bob Ryan phone issue.
Well, the beauty of having a podcast is, you know, we have enough time to do five other segments.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We can do that. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, Nigel will do the news. Seriously, can we fix that phone? Is there anything we can do? Can you amplify that in some way? Is there?
Not really, no.
No, there's nothing you can do?
No, once it's out there, it's out there.
Now that T-Mobile and AT&T merged.
I can boot, yeah, exactly.
They should send us a free phone because we as consumers are going to suffer for that, so we should get Bill Livingston a new phone.
There's not much I can do. I'll massage it as best I can.
That was a really bad phone.
There were only segments of it. I think it makes it sound very real.
It does? I think people listen and they go, I'm not listening to this anymore. The phone stinks. I think. I don't know.
Not
all right, we'll take a break. We'll have news when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Sherry's Berries ad. You can count on there are certain days of the year. There's Mother's Day. There's Valentine's Day. There's probably Thanksgiving or certainly Christmas where the Sherry's Berries people come in and they want you to do the ads. Yes. And that's fine.
And Mother's Day has snuck up on us again, hasn't it?
It has not really snuck up on us. No, it hasn't.
When you hear this read, you got to get your act together.
I was sort of surprised on one level with Mother's Day. I always thought Mother's Day was the first Sunday in May, and now it's not. It's not the first Sunday in May. Mother's Day is not this Sunday coming up. It's next Sunday. It says, talk about your mom and what you love most about her. You know, my mom's gone. I mean, I'm very, very old. But I could talk about my daughter-in-law, who's a mom, and why it'd be nice if she got Sherry's Berries.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I could sort of look at my son across the way and say, this would be a nice thing for you to do. A gift from Sherry's Berries shows
you normally
you
get that from Tori, Dad.
Right. Oh, Tori, you like these, so we can get them for you.
I do. I like Sherry's Berries
a lot. All right, so we'll get
them
for you.
And I give them as gifts a lot.
A gift from Sherry's Berries shows you put thought into her gift. Mom will love it. I swear. I'm supposed to say I swear. Right now, my listeners can send Sherry's Berries starting at $19.99 plus shipping and handling, or check this out. You can double the berries for just $10 more. Your berries will arrive in Sherry's Berries' signature gift box with a beautiful ribbon. No gift wrap is required. They are fresh, juicy strawberries dipped in milk, dark, and white chocolatey goodness, then topped with rich chocolate chips, chopped nuts, and signature swizzles. You choose your delivery date. It's guaranteed. The customer satisfaction is always number one, or your money back. Sherry's Berries has more than just berries. They've added amazing new treats created with mom in mind, like Mother's Day cake pops, strawberry cheesecake bites, and artisanal chocolate truffles. There's only one way to get this amazing deal for mom. Freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99 plus shipping and handling. And remember, you can also double the berries for $10 more. Mother's Day is May 13th. Visit berries, berries.com. Then click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter the code TKPOD. So this is a different code than TK or Tony K. This is TKPOD. That's berries.com, code TKPOD.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from David Marzo in Manassas, Virginia. I've been listening to Tony since the original WTM days. I'm grateful for the many years of listening. You've made many long commutes pleasantly endurable. I'm excited to send you some original music from a dear family friend. The band is The Let Go. Nicoletta Karamanis, an extremely talented high school junior at Colgan
junior.
High
this
School.
This is a high school junior?
Junior?
High school
junior.
I thought
Colgan
it was Weezer
high school
saying
Manassas.
So.
Yeah. Yeah,
is the lead good. Vocalist and songwriter. I'm sending you the title track for their newly released album, Too Much of a Good Thing. Release show will be at Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia on May 2nd. That's tomorrow. Doors opening at 6 p.m. Nicoletta will be accompanied acoustically by Todd Wright, a well-known local composer, singer, songwriter, and producer. This is a high school junior?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
High school junior. Doesn't make me feel like a failure at all by hearing this.
Wow.
I think if some of these people go on to really successful professional careers, they owe us a piece of their...
I would like to think right? so.
Michael, if anybody 10, wants to send in music of their friends, like David Marzo sent in of Nicoletta Karamanis, how do they do it?
Send your music into the show by emailing it to jingles@tonycornizershow.com.
And as everybody knows, we're selling Chatter t-shirts, and we're loaded with them for just $12. But what else are we selling?
So apparently the Hoff-Woff code at Johnny O is still active. So
go get it.
Go get it while it's still
go
live.
Get it
we'll
while
have something
it's
new
hot.
Later
Hoff-Woff.
In the spring, but this was
Nigel
not supposed
wearing
to still
Johnny
be
O. Yeah.
Very nice Johnny O show.
Very good. We're
Love
very good
gear.
On that.
Oh, and by the way, I should point out, if people want to do a podcast here, you can use this studio.
You can rent it.
Yes, just
even
reach
though
out to us.
Some of the people who do podcasts don't rent it.
No.
They just use it.
Well, yeah. But you can contact us through tonycornizershow.com. Send us an email, and we will get you all squared away.
From Michael Rod in McFarland, Wisconsin, as a loyal listener and reader for nearly two decades, I'd be honored by your presence at my son Derek's graduation from Brown. On Sunday, May 27th. Well, I'm not going to make that, even though it's an easy seven-hour Amtrak ride to Providence. Better yet, since Derek will be starting a summer job in D.C., simply hop in our Volkswagen Jetta for the return trip. Think of the fun. My wife and I have had the pleasure of visit to Chatter for breakfast and a photo last May. Thank you for being a part of my daily routine for years. That's the University of Brown, as we like to call it, the alma mater of Eric Rideholm, by the
that's
way.
That's right.
Eric Rideholm went to Brown. Matt Kelleher went to Georgetown. There's a million other people I could
Frankie
talk
Nation
about.
Frankie Nation went to Tennessee.
He went to Tennessee.
And he'll let you know about that.
Tierney Corrigan went to UConn. Matawano went to Northern Illinois.
Husky.
Daniel Light went to Maryland. Who else? I think I've just covered the entire room.
Morrell went to Duke. Oh, he's not
Morrell's
there
not there anymore. Morrell went to Duke. Lorenzo went to Florida International, which is so amazing. I know I'm getting sidetracked here because we're supposed to do news. Do you know the biggest school in the country of a single campus location?
Central Florida.
Florida International.
Central Florida. If you gave me 50 choices, I wouldn't have come up with that. Do you know how many people go to Florida International? A school that I thought was the size of this studio.
Right.
35,000.
Wow.
Florida International, which I think is in Florida Atlanta. One of them's in Boca, and one of them's in Miami.
Lane Kiffin using Boca.
Florida schools have the biggest population of students of any state in the country. These schools. How did you know Central Florida?
Because you mentioned it on PTI a few weeks ago.
Would you have ever picked it?
Probably not. I would have gone like Texas or Michigan.
I went Michigan, Ohio State,
yeah.
Penn State. Texas. They're not close. Michigan's in the top 10, but a lot of schools you think are in the top 10 are not in the top 10. Anyway, Nigel has news.
Central Florida in...
61,000.
It's actually 66,000. 66,000 in Orlando, and Florida
Orlando.
International. Yeah. Florida International is in Miami, so there you
How
go.
Many?
Oh,
it's like 30,000.
Let me go back to
I
that.
I never
one.
Heard of this school till 5 years ago.
How about this? 55,000.
It's just Florida International.
You can make friends
I mean, that sounds
easily.
Like a diploma mill. I mean, I wouldn't respect Florida International.
We just lost every fan from Florida.
Do you know what Florida International is?
I'm sorry, it's a really good school.
Do you know what their mascot is?
A Rottweiler.
Rory the Panther.
Okay, there you go.
Would not have guessed that either.
Yeah, Florida Panthers.
Right. Yeah.
Mr. Tony, we will start off with the NBA, and it appears as if you are no longer on an island by yourself about John Wall.
Boss!
Yes, in a Q&A back and forth.
Boss
with some
crushes
leaders.
John Wall, and correctly so.
Yeah.
John Wall thinks he's better than everybody else he plays with and is always telling you what the team needs. And now every single teammate has to be as dedicated. He always talks about how dedicated he is and how great he is. And meanwhile, last year he was the king of game six.
Yes.
And this year in games five and six, as that team collapsed in the fourth quarter in five and six, he was out on the court. Wilbon says yesterday he was tired. And I said, well, what does that mean? Then get him off the court you know, with the first 2 minutes of game for, help me out on this.
Well, if he was tired, he also had half the season off, so he shouldn't be tired. I mean, he ran out of gas last year. Wizards season ticket holder since 1998. I've been a wall defender since he came into the league.
You and the cheese boy.
I defended him against...
The cheese boy keeps saying, we're losing the greatness of John
Wall. Against Colin Cowherd or whatever. I'm off the wall train. And the wall way, whatever you want to call it. This season...
How can you write he's a point god? How can anybody write that?
He takes 18 shots a game. He doesn't have a jump shot. He makes passes in the fourth quarter that are so illogical. For example, game six against Toronto, I'm there. He tries to make an alley-oop pass from the top of the key. They're down by four. They just lost the lead. It's about 5 minutes left. What are you doing?
Okay, I'm going to take the other
doing?
Side of this.
Please, debate.
This. Okay,
rational, reasonable debate.
No, don't take something away unless you know how you're going to replace it. I don't know too many great players. You guys might. Who
I don't
want to
get rid of
Washington.
Them.
And then, in fairness, it's this show in the last several years, you know, somebody has to be a leader on that team. Somebody has to step up. However, artfully he does it or says it, I think he's trying. I think he's trying to speak to the greater challenges the team has. It might sound arrogant, but at least somebody's talking about it.
I think
the coach
have
seems to think everything's
coaching.
Fine.
I think they have ineffective coaching on that team, again, because I don't think that they necessarily accept coaching. I think you have a coach who says after every loss, this is unacceptable, and then changes nothing.
Right.
Changes nothing. What's
he draws
he doing?
Red lines and then does absolutely nothing about it.
But you could point to the GM being a problem. You could point to the coach being a problem.
Boston.
Roster construction. I think if you look at Wall, though, it's clear that he does not have the respect of his teammates. And if you're
like
a leader, you have to have the respect of your teammates. Regarding in terms of just court performance, I ranted about this last time I was on the show. Ty Lawson was in China 2 weeks ago. Right. He came in, not only produced, a lot of the time it seemed like they were spacing the court better, that he was distributing the ball to people who were actually open. And you're looking at yourself, you're saying – Ty Lawson just came off the plane from China, and he's better than the guy that's going to get 44 mil in 2022.
And he replaced. He sent Thomas Satoransky to the bench.
Oh, my gosh.
So
this, by the way, from
Boz. I mean, Boz and I sometimes
I'm
disagree.
Now,
yeah, sometimes disagree. But this sounds like it could have come from you, but it does come from Boz. Walls should be the best player on the team, but except for 16-17, he rarely has been. He has a huge heart, speed, athleticism, leader, ego, and is a gifted passer. But he misjudges and overvalues his own game just as much as he accuses some teammates of misjudging their talents and roles. By a mirror, John.
Yeah, it's Boz, not me. Yeah. Good, let's move on. But Torrey's defense was good.
Thank you.
Yes, well said, Torrey. To baseball, the Nats get the win over Pittsburgh 3-2 as Tanner Roark goes 7 innings.
No, I went on Saturday and Sunday. But
Tanner
Roark,
very gutsy in the 7th after giving up a home run. And Dave Martinez came out there, looked him in the eye, and Tanner Roark said, I got this, and he did. He did. Did you watch, Michael?
I did watch. So again, with baby boy Bootsy's bath time, I get to watch it at about a 30-minute delay, which is all I can handle because these are really stressful games in the last day of April. Yeah, it was gutsy he got out of it, but that one run changes the complexion of those last three innings because we have a depleted bullpen. You have a four-game series against the NL Central leading Pirates. You want to build on that 3-0 lead when you can. And I look back to the fourth inning when Ryan Zimmerman has the chance to pile the runs on and hits
10.
A weak ground ball into a double play. The top of the order is not really generating anything right now. And Harper looks just completely empty out there. He's frustrated. He's swinging at bad pitches again.
Bryce Harper is down to .249 batting average. He gets walked a lot. You remember 2 years ago when Joe Maddon got in his head by walking him like 14 times in
Seemed
four
to
games,
that
early
which
May
was
series.
Smart because Ryan Zimmerman drove in no runs.
Right.
It looks to me, Tori has her hand up.
I have a question. It's about Bryce Harper, but go ahead, finish.
It just looks to me like the walking is now into his head. He has become, they don't have Rendon. They may never get Adam Eaton because God knows what that is. Who else don't they have? They don't have Daniel Murphy. And Bryce Harper looks lost.
I had this. I asked some smart people this question the other day about Bryce Harper, about how much does it get in his head. They didn't have a good answer. But it looks like the other teams have effectively iced him.
I think he's okay with the walks. I think he's not okay when he looks to the rest of the lineup and he's looking at the 6, 7, 8, and the pitcher getting an RBI.
Yeah, Tanner Roark got a single and an RBI.
And Ryan Zimmerman is sitting out there going 0 for 4 again.
That's the rub. He's not. He doesn't have any protection. Yeah, and on top of that, I mean, now they're 2-8 in one-run games. The runners in scoring position now.
They were 1-8?
They were 1-8 in one-run games. Now they're 2-8. The runners in scoring position is still god-awful. The bullpen is still shaky. On your point about the injuries, though, this is happening every single year. Anthony Rendon fouls a ball off his foot and suddenly is gone for a month. It's supposed to be day-to-day. Adam Eaton,
he's disappeared.
A little bit of strain.
He could be on
day.
The moon.
He's gone.
Witness protection.
He could
program.
Actually be on the moon. Yes.
I think that we may have to look into how our trainers evaluate players and their injuries or just something.
At least they got a bullpen performance.
Speaking of injuries, if you had Corey Seager playing any more games this year,
really hurts
you
the
lose.
Dodgers.
Yes,
this really hurts
yes,
the Dodgers.
He will undergo Tommy John
he
surgery.
He was the rookie of the year 2 years ago, I think.
He
was
2-time All-Star.
Very high in the MVP voting.
Yeah.
And he's a shortstop. You hear about pitchers getting this all the time. A shortstop needs Tommy John surgery.
I've heard catchers who've had to get it, but not shortstops.
He's out. Really. He's out the whole
year. How old is he?
23,
it's
24.
A baby, right?
Yeah, he's a youngster. I don't have his age right here, but
the sad thing is when
he's younger than Larry King, who has good seats.
When you read his quotes, he sounds relieved at the fact that there's actually a diagnosis now after trying to rehab all winter long. And having this affect his outlook onto this year.
Dodgers and Nats, two most disappointing teams in baseball so
Dave
far.
Dave Roberts saying that the Dodgers are still going to win the division. I have to tell you.
They got four good teams in that division.
I watched two of those games of the D-backs against the Nats. I'll admit, I don't watch a lot of the D-backs. I like to watch the Giants and the Dodgers. D-backs are a very tough out. And that
so
lineup,
is Colorado.
They grind Colorado. Those at-bats. Yeah. And they're a good team. I like D-backs.
And by the way, Corey Seager, probably not just done for this year. I mean, recovery from it could be gone for a year and a half. You know, it could be gone for most of next year as well.
What else do you have?
We talked about this the other day, how they found the Golden State Killer.
Just if you can get access to the Washington Post website, just read this story about how they use DNA first to go backwards to the killer's great grandfather and then to trace the lineage down to see if there are any matches, and they find out there's two people in the Sacramento area in that period of time. It's
fascinating.
It really is. Really is a great story.
Paul Holes is the guy that was behind all
just
of it, and it really is just a brilliant
and he was about to retire and he really wanted to get this one done. It's a really good story.
It's really great.
When's the movie come out?
It's really great.
Well, the moral of the story is that if you want to become a serial killer, do not do 23andMe or a long-term DNA project.
Right, yes. Right, yes.
Keep your saliva to yourself.
That's right.
And Mr. Tony, it's with a heavy heart that I say melancholy happy trails to a legend, not only in this country, but certainly here in Washington, D.C. Anyone that lived in this region, certainly in the 80s, knows this name. Jun Ri has passed away, called the father of the martial art of Taekwondo here in the United States. He was a 10th degree black belt, the father of
10th degree.
10th degree, the father of American Taekwondo. There is a fantastic.
Not the nth degree, but the 10th degree.
There is, I guess he did a movie with Bruce Lee, and I'm looking at a picture right now of him in a karate fight with Bruce Lee. I mean, and anybody says, nobody bothers me. The famous ad, which. One of the reasons, one of the many reasons why I love the Americans is in one of the episodes in the background,
Jun Ri.
On the TV was an ad with nobody bothers me. I mean, it's just so very heavy heart. Jun Ri, you will be missed, sir.
All right, we will take a break. We will come back with Old Guy Radio, right?
That's right.
I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Chuck Berry. Nigel, why are we playing this song?
Because on this day in 1955, Chess Records signed a young guitarist by the name of Chuck Berry to their label at the recommendation of somebody named Muddy Waters.
63 years ago today.
Wow.
And then a couple of months later, he recorded this, Maybelline, which was his first big hit. And a lot of people say this is when rock and roll began, with this song. Well,
certainly not
with this
Bill
man.
Haley in the comments.
No, with
rock
this song.
Around the clock.
And as they were recording it, this was a remake of a Bob Willis tune called Ida Red, and he changed the name to it, and they sort of changed it around. They said, no, we got to come up with a new name and speed it up a little bit. And somebody saw some makeup on the floor and said,
Maybelline.
Why don't we just call it Maybelline? And they changed the spelling of it so they wouldn't get sued by Maybelline, and rock and roll history was made.
So on my Mount Rushmore, everybody gets a crack at this. On my Mount Rushmore for American rock and roll, I got Chuck Berry over Little Richard. I got Elvis Presley, because Elvis Presley's talent is much undervalued. People just think of him in these dopey movies. Elvis Presley was a great singer.
It also wasn't Elvis, just that he changed his talent. He made it okay for white people to love rock and roll.
He changed it. I got Michael Jackson over Prince. And I got Bob Dylan as my fourth over Paul Simon. I got no Sam Cooke, who's really great. I got no Marvin Gaye, who's really great. I got no Frankie Valli, who's really great. I got no Diana Ross, who's really great. I've got those four. I got Chuck Berry, Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson, and Bob Dylan. We have younger people here. Do you have anybody else that you would put on there? American rock and roll.
Yeah, I would put Bruce Springsteen there. Certainly. I would go Chuck Berry, Bruce Springsteen. I think you have to go Dylan. I hold out a place for Tina Turner.
So you get rid of Elvis Presley and Michael Jackson?
Well, Michael Jackson, to me, it's tough. It's tough. Basically because my mom did so many articles about how terrible of a human being he was. I don't want to put him up there. But I just go back to Tina Turner and her voice. And to me, that sort of encompasses – I know she wasn't necessarily Motown, but that era. Springsteen, I think you have to have up there. I go back and forth this debate all the time, and I actually got in a fist fight about this over college.
A fist fight?
Yes.
Alcohol involved?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Who is more important to American rock and roll, Elvis Presley or Bob Dylan?
To American rock and roll, Elvis Presley.
But I would think that – but I went with Dylan because I think that Dylan basically gives you alternative rock. He gives you emo. He allows the songwriter to talk about more than just my baby on a Friday night, my car. And that's why I would have it up there. So I would go Chuck Berry, Bruce Springsteen, Tina Turner, Bob Dylan.
Tori?
I would take out Springsteen and put in Tina Turner. You've got to have her. And the body of work, she's still
performing.
Ahead
of Diana Ross.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Bob Dylan's coming out with a line of whiskey, by the way.
Right,
I saw that.
Right.
That's very cool.
Very excited. He's
Heaven's Door's whiskey, right? Yeah. I think he signed, the way he signed it, you can only see his signature when you finish the bottle.
Oh, cool.
That's kind of nice.
Michael?
I just think it's important to try and qualify what you mean by American rock and roll, because I think it changes so much in the 60s, 70s to 80s, 90s. And I would put MJ back up there just because of his proximity and his driving of those changes from the simple rock songs that he did with the family to what he was doing in the late 80s.
Michael's such a teacher.
He is a teacher. Nigel?
Nice.
Well, we all agree that the Village People are in their own category.
They are.
Lions of the... I would actually... You know what? There's a name on here that you would probably yell at me for this, but I think I'd put Phil Spector on that list. I think he's a huge influence. I mean, obviously...
Incarcerated at the moment.
Well, at the moment.
At the moment.
Right. The later work is obviously not there. Yeah. But the influence that he had on music, I think certainly in the 60s, he changed everything.
The production Everest. Then you put Brian Wilson up there,
right?
Oh,
sure.
Quincy Jones.
All worthy people.
Do we get to late 90s boy bands?
We don't. We skip all of the late 90s.
Kurt Cobain.
By the way, you know what I did? I got up this morning. I didn't want to miss this. We're getting dawn a little bit earlier now. There's light in the sky. So I wanted to not miss this. Really, I got up at 4:45 this morning to see the moon. Because not last night, but the night before, there was a full moon.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed the full moon in a clear sky. And I didn't know where it would be. And I was out this morning at 4:45 looking due west from my house. And I saw it's beginning to wane, but there's, you know, but it still looked very, very full in the sky. I like to do that. I like to look at full moons. I'm not a werewolf or anything, but I like to look. Did you happen to see it, Tori, this morning?
I did not see it this morning. I was up bright and early, but I didn't see it. Yeah. I was Pelotoning early.
I went out to find it.
I think maybe we get one of those mobiles that hangs from the ceiling here, Nigel. With the sun and the moon and the planets.
Well, I was thinking we could also put the little decals that, you know, glow in the dark.
Oh, nice. So
I like those.
Yeah.
We had those in Michael's room and Elizabeth's room on the ceiling.
I think they're still there.
So, confession I have to make regarding the moon. This might be another only child thing. Last night was a beautiful moon.
Yeah.
I like to go up on my roof, Batman style, with like a black hooded sweatshirt on and sit up there by myself and just stare at the moon. Sitting on a little ledge, it's a little bit dangerous, but I stay there and I soak it all in. And traveling the world, I got to tell you, I'm not the only one. There's a lot of weirdos that like to go stare at the moon.
I do.
By the beach.
I don't.
In the morning.
I don't sit on the roof.
Right.
But I go out in my yard at 4:45. I locate the moon and I watch the moon.
Should
for
I put
a while.
A Tony Kornheiser show?
Oh, absolutely.
Light out
yeah,
of the sky.
In the light.
This
we
is
need
interesting.
Dr. Tony.
In my travels in my life, there is one thing that I have seen that it, just one that is the most compelling thing for me that I have ever seen. And every time I am in this place, I go to it, I sit near it, and I gaze at it. That is the Arch in St. Louis, which is, for me, the most fascinating bit of architecture. I've never been to the Heads. I'd like to see the Heads in South Dakota. I've never been to those.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
But of the
yeah.
things I have seen, some people will say the Grand Canyon, some people say the Empire State, but whatever it is, whatever you think it is, for me, it is that perfectly constructed arch that to me means nothing. The only thing it could mean is, and I've been to the Great Wall of China too, the only thing it could mean is it's a signal to aliens that we're here and we've got this pretty cool thing and you can look at it. And people, and I felt this way about Dealey Plaza in oh. Dallas, but not as much as the arch. For me, it's the arch. Is there any, Tori, you've been all around the world.
I haven't. I'm just staring at you going, the arch?
Yeah, the arch in St. Louis.
It's not even natural.
How did they get, how did they know it would meet?
It's man-made.
I understand. I understand. For natural stuff, for me, it's Niagara Falls.
Yeah, I like natural things so much better.
Niagara Falls for me.
I'd put the Grand Canyon right up there.
Yeah.
Pretty extraordinary.
If it's man-made, I either go with the Great Wall of China, which you just see how far it extends.
It's astonishing.
Or the Heads in Easter Island that I still can't get over how they were built and moved around. I still have visions about those.
But not the Heads in South Dakota.
No. This is Easter
Island.
I know.
Have you seen the Heads in South Dakota?
I did, about 10 years ago.
Not that.
Yeah, it was great.
Not that much for you.
It didn't freak me out. And I think in terms of the world and this sort of natural beauty, if you go to Milford Sound in New Zealand...
Beautiful.
Check it out.
Two out of beautiful. Five have been there. Check 40% of the crowd has been
I have
there.
A public service announcement for Michael. When you move him to Ingleside and they call you up and say he's gone missing, just say, go look outside.
Yeah, he's looking at the moon. He's looking at the moon.
Complimentary wine with dinner at Ingleside. It looks like from the
commercials. Dinner at 3.
Driving fantastic. By Stonehenge was a little bit more moving than I thought it would be. And
England?
I didn't visit the site. It was during a golf tour. And it was like Mother's Day. It snuck up on me.
Right.
But trying to just understand that site. I'm just so shocked. You are driven by the moon, by tides.
Yeah.
You're basically stuck in the Middle Ages.
Yeah, pretty much.
And yet you are completely in awe of the arch.
The arch.
Yeah. I thought next you're going to say that you're amazed by the bean in Chicago.
The arch.
Great
the
place to cool. selfie.
You have any?
I mean, have you ever been to Potomac Mills and seen the IKEA down there?
That is really something.
Nice.
I mean, it's just
all
inspiring.
That is really something. Yeah. All right, I just continuing with this, with sort of naturalism on this show, I don't know where you live. You are listening. I don't know where you live. In Washington, D.C. on Thursday, it is going to be 90 degrees. Summer arrives in Washington, D.C. on Thursday.
Straight from winter to summer.
Yeah. We did not get a spring. There were... The most delightful days of the year are the days when the temperature range is between 65 and 72. Where in the morning you might need a jacket, but in the afternoon it's beautiful and you take off layers of clothing and you feel the warmth of the day. Not the hot of the day.
The
warmth of the day. It's going to be 90 here on Thursday. Today is Tuesday. That's it. There was no spring.
None. The only good thing about the no spring is things like the tulips and the daffodils lasted longer because they were cold every day. So they actually hung around a little bit longer. So that's good.
My azaleas have not yet fully popped, which is at least 2 weeks late.
They'll be
at
out
least
for 2 days.
2 weeks late. Yeah, and then they'll melt. It's going to be 90.
Less mosquitoes, though, which was nice. But I was just speaking to someone much smarter than me about this, and they say this is probably climate change. In the
sense
the
extremes.
That if you look at D.C. now, the summer really goes to October. It is quite warm in September. And Michael and I were talking about, you have kids now wearing shorts to school way until about November.
Yes.
And you have these really cold marches. You know, March used to be a very nice month in Washington, and now it's just terribly cold. And then
it was terrible. April was terrible.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
It was the cruelest month, yes.
So I'm not happy about this at all.
Nats game during the day on Thursday, 95. I don't know. Dude.
So wow. I was planning to take Bootsy to the game because it's a 1 o'clock and you can't take him to a 4 or 7. But it's a hazard.
Can you explain why you can't take him to a 4 or 7?
Do you know what the sort of bedtime routine is for a child under the age of 1?
7:30 is when he goes to bed.
Right. So a 7 o'clock game.
4 o'clock game.
Yeah, but you need to start. It takes an hour to feed him. He gets solids. He gets dessert. He has to play. He's got to crawl. But it's a hazard
about
to take
time
a
he grew
kid
up.
To
yeah,
that
game.
You get a good shade. We can get you a good shade ticket, and then they open up that the hydration center for the people that are
just stick him in
it.
The middle of that. The sprinkler.
Yeah. The sprinkler.
Come back in 2 hours.
A few times.
So all you have to do. So you're unlikely to go to the 1 o'clock.
Probably, yeah.
Because it's going to be
but
too hot.
But you go for a few innings.
Yeah.
So I have to go to. I have to go Sunday. I have to. Wilbon is getting an award on
nice.
Sunday,
where?
And I have at Nats Park, and I have to introduce him Sunday at noon.
Wow.
Who do they play Sunday?
Phillies.
Play Phillies. So I could go to the game, like for a couple of innings.
And not the whole thing.
No, but I mean,
you get parking?
I hope to get parking. If I don't get parking, I'm not going.
Make sure you get the player's lot that lets you go right into the stadium.
By the way, I saw
that's fantastic.
I'm being asked to go there and work and make an introduction, and so I would hope that I would get parking.
You could get Scherzer Arrieta on Sunday, which is a nice
matchup. Is that right?
That's what I think it times out to right now. Regarding
the players, is Scherzer going tonight?
Scherzer's going tonight. Arrieta got pushed back one, and I think that you would get Scherzer Arrieta, which would be pretty interesting.
That would be a different thing.
The player's lot that you're talking about is extraordinary. It's across the street from Bardo Brewing, which I encourage everybody to go to, and the Salt Line, two quality establishments. But I was at the Bardo Brewing on Sunday after the game, and we see a lot of the fans waiting for players to get their autograph coming out of that player's lot. And who do we see but going like a bat out of hell in a beautiful big white Audi? Bob Carpenter screeching those tires, baby. Carp screeching the tires, taking an aggressive right at the red light. They go, Carp, get out there, buddy. Get out.
That's funny.
It is indeed supposed to be Arrieta versus Scherzer on Sunday.
I mean, that's worth the price of admission.
It's just the best.
Tonight's probably the first game all year he doesn't have to stop a losing streak.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Except for opening
game
day.
One.
You know, that's probably it. All right, we will. There was more. I was going to talk about my golf weekend. You know what? I can't break 100. I've reached that point. I'm now really bad. Michael,
I don't break
100.
Did you golf less in April than you normally do because of the weather? Maybe you're just not into the year
I
yet.
I went out. No, I don't hit it.
But you should look at this. Dad brought in a photo, which is a collage from the first and last Nerds in Paradise golf tournament from August 1, 2005.
I thought it was earlier than that. I didn't realize
I remember I was in college, and we actually have a timestamp on this, so we can go with it.
Yeah.
But look at these photos to see when you were a better player, simpler times.
I'm terrible now. I cannot break 100. If I roll in a good putt, it's for double. It's like, yeah, give me a 6. I really stink. And I wasn't ever this
bad
consistently.
Get yourself some new training.
But she's good. I mean,
well,
Helen's
clearly
good.
Not so
no,
good.
Helen's good. I mean, as a physical trainer.
Do you allow yourself? But I mean, a golf coach.
Maybe I don't have a golf coach.
Well, and he refuses to practice.
And I don't actually practice.
Well, other than that.
Let's tee it up.
Yeah, man.
Life is short.
It's a club golfer trend and problem. Your only concern is playing as quickly as possible.
Yeah, let's put the peg in the ground and go. I am a terrible player. And on that note, we'll get out of here and we will come back with a jingle and some email when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yeah. I was a tourist New Yorker and a guest of honor at the American season premiere. Then to the after party where I'd eat some Havarti and do what else was really unclear. An exec said, kiddo, just take my limo. We got in, though it was just a short jaunt. A woman with a clipboard pulled us out and roared, you're just some perv who owns a restaurant. So we strolled. It wasn't too cold. It was fine. But once I got there, I met Pastor Tim, and I wanted to kill him till I heard he was a fan of the pod. Then Carrie Russell nearly stopped my heart and muscle as she gestured toward this old slob. Is she waving at me or someone standing behind me? I couldn't really know for sure. No time to dawdle diddle, I was stuck in the middle. I turned around and stared at the door, and I decided to walk away.
Yes, I
really
walked
away, holding my Cabernet, because I had nothing to say except, what a shot!
this Jason Singer, who says this is the first time he's ever done this, his first foray into the landscape. This is really good. This is really good.
Yeah,
that said, it's a good thing you didn't talk to her, because she'd probably respond with something like, if you knew how tired I was, you wouldn't be talking right now. Season 6, Episode 1. Before we get into the mailbag, let me thank Bill Livingston, the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Let me thank today's sponsors, Sherry's Berries and SeatGeek. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. In the area of advertising, Chatter is going to be rocking on Saturday, the combination
of
Cinco de Mayo and the Kentucky Derby.
Derby Day, that's right.
And as it's written here, TACO, Taco Bauta Cinco de Derby, 5 p.m. to 12 a.m., food and drink specials, giveaways, fun, $6 Rye Rickeys, $5 Sauza Gold Shots, Sauzas, that's how it's pronounced, $10 32-ounce Corona Familiar, $5 Tecate and Dos Equis Amber, $5 16-ounce Modelo cans. I'm advertising for my daughter. I'm doing the best I can.
Muy bien aquí.
Keep it interesante, right?
Keep it interesante, absolutely. Or keep it intravenous. From Fred Genther, I was hoping to be the official climate change denier of the Tony Kornheiser Show. That's open, right?
Yeah, the position is open, yes.
Yeah, that is open.
We're interviewing candidates now.
Mike Roseberry, State College, Pennsylvania. So Mr. Tony said the room at the Correspondents' Dinner was too young for him. I'm pretty sure that in an age-appropriate room for him is called a mausoleum. So Lisa may not like low-hanging mean humor, but it is my true medium. From Bennett Sparks in Vermont, you let Wilbon off a little easy. Yes, Jordan was a better defender, but James is very close behind him, and James is the best rebounding non-power forward center I've ever seen, and he's either the second or third best passer. Jordan does not rank near him in either of those categories. I probably would still take Jordan, but it needs to be a fair fight. It's not fair with Wilbon. Wilbon is a denier that anyone is as good as Michael Jordan. It doesn't matter what you say. Yeah, it's not. One fascinating stat in Jordan's favor: in his second season, after missing almost the whole season with an injury, he came back in time for the playoffs and against one of the great teams in NBA history, Ainge, Dennis Johnson, Bird, McHale, and Parrish, with Wedman and Walton off the bench. He scored 49 the first game and 63 the second. How about that for the first two playoff games of your career?
That's pretty good.
Lonnie Steves writes, stop with your Alexis stories. I am working yesterday, and all of a sudden, Alexis says Brooks Robinson was born in 1937, just after Michael said a lot of Alexas just turned on. Alexa's a little. Is that possible that if you listen and I say Alexa in your house, that turns on?
Keep saying Alexa and see what happens.
Definitely Alexa, possible. Play Beach Boys now.
Alexa, representative. This is so long. I'm sitting here listening to the dulcet tones of Leon Harris mewing about how he can't remember anybody doing more with less than LeBron advancing past the Pacers this year with his Cavs team. Did I miss something? Was this LeBron willing his team to a championship or at least through the Eastern Conference Finals? Or was this LeBron getting past a 5 seed, which had only one All-Star, who was an alternate in the first round? But more to Leon's lament, allow me to take him back to the early aughts when a little-known player named Allen Iverson dragged the following carcasses to the NBA Finals and even took a game from Shaq and Kobe. Rajah Bell, best known for getting into it with Kobe that one time when Bell was on the Suns. Rodney Buford, who they apparently called the sheriff. He must have been appointed because I don't remember the election. Speedy Claxton, later a stowaway on the Spurs 2003 title trip. Matt Geiger, who was from Clearwater, Florida, enough said. Tyron Hill, just Ouch. Google a picture of that guy. Jermaine Jones, who was a rookie that year but was playing on the European Tour 6 years later. George Lynch, 6.6 points a game career, 8.4 points per game year in question. Todd McCullough, Canadian, hard pass. Aaron McKee, sixth man of the year that year at 11.6 points per game. Probably a great locker room guy, lots of intangibles. Tony Kukoc didn't go to college and was born in 1968. Rashawn McCloud, I mean, come on, Leon. NCAA National Championship coach Kevin Ollie. Juan Ignacio Pepe Sanchez Brown, who was probably peddling Argentine skirt steak to both Geno's and Pat's. Eric Snow, who was best known for shooting 20% and 27% from the charity stripe his first 2 years at Michigan State. And the piece de resistance, a 34-year-old Dikembe Mutombo, Mutombo Maplando Mukama Jean-Jacques Wanampunto, something like that. And all you can ever say when his name comes up is, who wants to sex Mutombo? Ask Alonzo Mourning about that story. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning for free rings. You're welcome, Leon. This is from Atana Osama, currently residing in Chicago, Illinois, but always representing my country of birth, Cameroon, and the census designated place I was raised, McLean, Virginia, a.k.a. the ligament. I knew Saliza would like that. You know what is forgotten here? One of the greatest coaches in the history of basketball, Larry Brown. Larry Brown coached that team.
That's the most impressive thing in modern NBA history.
And if I remember correctly, the 76ers won one game.
Yeah.
And then lost four in a row. And why do I think that what the Boston Celtics just did reminds me of that in particular? If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
This book is devastating.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Like that.
precious girl.